You have arrived at your destination. That's right, Wildlings. You have arrived at your destination, the Sean vs. Wild podcast. Of course, I'm your host, the man, the myth, the Sean Thriller Smith, the guy putting rad back into talk radio. And it's time to rock and roll all night and podcast every Tuesday. And guys, this Tuesday, I'm sitting down chatting with an old friend of mine. His name is Marvin from the band Marvin. And he's going to be sitting down chatting with me all about music. We're talking about Garth Brooks. We're talking about growing up, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon. He's going to be talking about his upcoming album that he is recording in the studio next month and all of the craziness that goes along with being a totally gigging musician. And guys, if you're in the 502-812 area, something tells me you've probably seen Marvin before. This guy keeps a very busy schedule. But if you have not seen him, and I'm sure after this podcast you're going to love to see the guy, you'll need to go to the Barrel House on Market on 420. So Friday night, kick off your Thunder Over Louisville festivities with Marvin. Friday night, 420 at the Barrel House on Market. And if you haven't been there, it used to be called the Levee, but it's totally renovated, totally refurnished. It's very nice. Definitely go check that out. And then, yeah, guys, definitely check out my awesome sponsors at audiophileinc.com, especially if you want some sweet merch. You know, maybe you keep a pretty busy gig and schedule and you need some merch to sell. Well, Audiophile Inc. Can definitely hook you up. Shane's been printing all my merch for the last decade or more, and he can do the same for you. Tank tops, t-shirts, sweatshirts, anything that you want. If you can imagine it, Shane can make it happen for you. All you have to do is go to audiophileinc.com and ask for Shane. Tell him the Wild Man sent you. That's AudiophileInc.com. Also, big shout out to my sponsor at Audible. You guys know Audible. It's an Amazon company. And if you like audiobooks as much as I do, well, guess what, dude? You are in luck. Just for listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, Audible will give you a free 30-day trial of their services. You can always cancel at any time. And with that, you will sign up and you will get a choice of over 180,000 audiobooks at your disposal. So pick out an audiobook that you like, give it a listen, and if you don't like it, you still get to keep the audiobook if you cancel the service. But it's pretty awesome if you ask me. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. That's audibletrial.com/SEANVSWILD. Sean versus Wild. And guys, cannot do the show without my main dude, my main man here, Joe Brock. He's booping the dials. And big shout out to Joe Brock for booping those dials again this week. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends, tell somebody new about the podcast. Let's build our numbers up week in and week out and keep this thing rolling for you. But guys, that's going to be it for me for the intro. Check out my conversation with Marvin. Now let's get wild.
Yeah, Marvin, I'm not trying to embarrass you right off the bat here, but I feel like we have to tell the people somehow over the years, our paths just keep crossing.
It is kind of odd how they like intertwine.
Yeah.
It's like two storylines.
Exactly. We're just like Game of Thrones, man. Yeah. Our storylines are just running parallel and sometimes interweave.
Here's the unfortunate thing. I'm one of the few people on the face of Earth that has not watched a Game of Thrones nor Walking Dead.
Well, I'm barely human. I'm barely even a person. Game of Thrones, I would highly suggest checking out. Walking Dead, you can pass. Hard pass from me.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Usually those two almost come like hand in hand with people. And Breaking Bad as well. That's like the trifecta of the, you haven't watched.
Oh, my God. Do you have Netflix or what, bro?
Yeah, are you a person?
Yeah.
That's why I say that.
Like, right. Well, now here's the deal. You're not missing much when it comes to Walking Dead. Cool. I watched about the first 5 episodes, and I was like, "Nah, I'm good." But everybody's like, "Hey, you got to watch to like the 3rd season, then it gets really good." And I'm like, "Dude, if I got to watch 3 seasons for it to be good, it's not that good."
It's not good. Yeah, it should have me enamored in like the first 5. That's how a show works.
Exactly. Yeah. That is exactly how it works. You got to hook them in. And then you can be disappointing
it's
later.
It's like a wrestling storyline, man.
You got it.
All day.
But so the embarrassing part, why I didn't want to embarrass you, is how we first met. Bus 11W, yeah. New Washington.
New Washington, Indiana.
Yeah. And how old are you? I'm 32.
I'm 25.
Okay,
I'll be 26 next week.
Right. So now we're about 6 years difference, mm-hmm. and somehow on our school bus we get assigned seats. And so I'm probably in the eighth or ninth grade at this point, probably my last couple years
of middle school. Yeah.
My last couple years of middle school, but really my last couple years of riding a bus in general.
Yeah, exactly.
And you are in your heyday of riding the bus.
Yeah. I'm thick deep in the middle of it. Yeah,
exactly.
No driver license for a while for me.
Right. And then, I just remember you had a great flat top or some sort of...
No, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, flat top.
Hair thing going on. And you were like, you just hated me. It was so great. You just hated me on the school bus. And of course, well, why would you want to sit next to the fat, sweaty guy on the bus?
Oh, dude, that's not what it was.
I know.
You were older than me. That's why I hated you.
I was too cool.
Yeah, exactly. Just by being older than me, you immediately had more cool points than I had on my card.
But I just remember you being like, oh, you're wearing cologne. It stinks.
That's exactly how I felt.
But then our paths just kept crossing. But yeah, I remember you just being that kid on the school bus. And I remember I knew you from your, you didn't go by Marvin then.
No.
So.
Went by my middle name.
Yeah, went by your middle name. And, you know, I didn't think about you for, you know, a decade.
Right.
And then randomly, I'm with my good friend Evan. Evan's my roommate here at the Smithsonian. I've been best friends with Evan since we were like.
Oh, do you call this the Smithsonian?
Oh, you know it.
That is so dope. That's so cool. Because, like, I don't know if you ever listened to, I'm sorry, sidebar, Jim Cornette.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he calls it the, he has, like, the cult of Cornette, and then the, he refers to his home as something of Cornette or something like that. I absolutely love that you call it the Smithsonian.
Oh, yeah.
That's so great.
Every king's got to have a kingdom.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. But yeah, so Evan, my roommate here at the Smithsonian, we went and saw Fall Out Boy maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And randomly he runs into you and he's like, hey, what's going on, dude? And, you know, you guys were just chatting. And then he was like, yeah, that's like my cousin-ish. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? This is my family. And I was like, yeah, that guy looks really familiar. And he's like, yeah, you might remember him from school. You know, he went to New Washington. And it just clicked. I was like, okay, yeah, that was that kid from the school bus.
The flat top kid. Who hated me.
Yeah, he hated my cologne, but he loved Dragon Ball Z.
I did. To this day, and I still do.
To this day.
Hard. To this day, hard.
I don't know anything about Dragon Ball Z.
Really?
I mentioned that so much on the podcast because it must have been a generational thing because so many people talk to me about Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z, and I...
Pokemon died out early for me. Dragon Ball Z, like I said, never left. Like I've always, and I will tell you this: if you can appreciate, because we both we don't necessarily have to talk about today, but we both love professional wrestling. If you are a fan of professional wrestling, you can learn to appreciate Dragon Ball Z because of power levels. Simply just because of that, like the aspect of this person now has done this, so he is stronger than this person. So now when they clash, it's different than the last time. Because that's pretty much every storyline of Dragon Ball Z ever.
So it's a pro wrestling anime. Well, now
you've
piqued my interest.
Except they actually can use magic. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, the Undertaker can use magic also.
True.
So
true, he can.
So it's a pro wrestling anime. Is what you're
saying? John Cena at WrestleMania. That's the biggest. Like I've never seen anybody.
That's certainly true. There was certainly some sort of black magic afoot, considering last year he could barely move, and this year he's running his ass off.
Yeah.
So it was what it was.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it was. Listeners, it was black magic.
It was black magic, yeah.
That's exactly what
between,
we saw.
Between how dead he looked last year and the fact that nobody ever takes down John Cena at WrestleMania, it was black magic.
Yeah, he must have taken a dip in the Lazarus pool.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying? Lake of Reincarnation.
That's so true.
I feel like we're going down. Wonderful.
But yeah, but to continue the story, so yeah, Evan was like, yeah, this is my cousin and everything. And then I randomly saw you at the gym. Mm-hmm. You were working at LAC.
The LAC.
And then so I was like, oh, hey, dude, what's going on? And then I moved into a place with a roommate, Brian, and you had just moved out, and I moved in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved out, you moved back in.
I moved back in, yeah. Yeah.
So our paths... This is destiny. This podcast tonight is destiny, ladies and gentlemen.
There's been a lot of steps that have been applied previous to this that have led to this moment in our lives. Yeah,
it all
from
comes
11W to Mr. Brian Mosier's home. Yeah,
to the Smithsonian.
To the Smithsonian,
guys. It's the dream match right here today on the Sean versus Wild podcast.
You wanted the best. Well, they couldn't make it. So this is what you get.
This is what you get. But guys, this isn't just the Black Magic Destiny podcast. This is also the Sean versus Wild podcast. And as I said earlier, I'm here in the Smithsonian with Marvin, who is going to be joining us here today. Guys, if you haven't checked out Marvin yet, multi-talented. The dude, I mean, is there an instrument that you can't play, bro?
There are a few, but yeah, I prefer not to talk about them. Actually, there's a lot of instruments I can't play. If you did a comparative list, it's not nearly as impressive when you look at it that way, but I can play like a few.
Yeah, I do all right.
Yeah, I do okay. Yeah.
Way to really...
I just don't think about those other instruments.
Way to really shoot for the middle, man. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Middle of the road, that's where I'm at.
But yeah, dude, super talented guy. And if you're in the Louisville area, you've definitely seen this guy play everywhere. You're always busy. You keep a full schedule. And, you know, guys, if you really want to hang out with him, you can go to Vinyl Lounge right here in downtown Jeffersonville. Not a sponsor of the podcast yet, but I highly recommend you check it out.
Emphasis on the yet.
Emphasis on the
especially after that plug.
Yeah, and he'll be spinning records and serving drinks, bro. That's what's up.
That's all we play.
What's up, man? Well, dude, now that you're here on the podcast, I guess let's give the listeners give them the background deets, dude. Like, my biggest question is, how do you go from that kid that loves Dragon Ball Z on bus 11W to
that adult that loves Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah, but is also shredding some serious guitar, dude. Like, what made you decide to start playing music?
Well, my father put food on the table up until I was about 12 or 13, doing what I've been doing for the last 8 years pretty heavily, which is being essentially a bar gigging, musician.
A paid musician.
A paid musician. Yeah,
guys,
a paid musician.
Listen up, okay?
It's a thing, in case you didn't know. I know a lot of people think it doesn't exist.
Marvin, unlike some of us, me included, actually gets paid for what he does.
True. To be clear, though, there's a trade-off, though, because I never have been paid to play my own music.
Yet.
You're
emphasis
yet,
on the yet.
Emphasis on the yet. But no, my dad, to answer your question, my dad had always played. My grandmother sang in church when I was a kid. My aunt was a pianist. A very talented pianist, and so it was kind of in the family, not heavily, but it was. But especially with my dad. My dad was the black sheep of his family who wanted to do something different than do the 9-to-5 thing, and so he did. And that carried on until my childhood. So I got to watch my dad, you know, work a day job, but then on the weekends go be a rock star,
right?
You know? And I got to go to some of the private events he would play, and I got to see him in action, and immediately fell in love with it.
Is he the one that basically got you into music? Because, I mean, what music were you into as a kid?
From that, I started, like, discovering more music. And country was, because that's what my dad performed. So that was obviously the one
and
I was
where
more
we grew
inclined.
Up.
And obviously,
we're definitely inclined
we're
to
from
listen
southern
to
freaking Indiana. Yeah, like, it's
exactly.
Cornfields everywhere. Like, what were we supposed to listen to?
ICP.
Yeah.
We had two choices, country or ICP.
ICP. Yes. And then ICP scared the fuck out of me at 10 years old. So, can I not cuss on here?
Oh, you can definitely say whatever you want.
Okay,
you
cool.
Can say ICP on
cool,
here.
Cool.
Nobody's going to consider that a cuss word.
But at the same time, my dad was very open minded when it came to music, especially at that age. So, you know, my dad would work out of town. I would travel with him, and we would listen to George Strait and Garth Brooks. I will be the first to tell people that was my first one of my first musical crushes. I worshiped the ground that he walked on, because he was such a melding of two worlds I loved, pop and country, not the garbage I consider to be now.
Yeah, the pop country now is trash.
Garbage,
and
horrible.
I don't even want to think in my mind's eye, like, I don't even want to be like, well, Garth Brooks inspired this shit. Because it's totally not even close.
It's a scary rabbit hole to go down. I've been down it. I've thought about it. It's made me question everything in my life.
Yeah. Is Garth good, or is he just responsible for this shit?
He was good, but he may or may not have put things in motion that led to, you know, the Luke Bryans of the world. So.
Yeah. Well, country music now is just, I don't know, it's just like electronic beats with like somebody playing some banjo in
there. It's crappy streamlined hip hop with country subject matter.
Yeah, right.
It's exactly what it is. Hip hop, I believe they refer to. They even give it a name.
Yeah.
So hip-hop. I don't know what to think anymore. But no, that's what I grew up in. So he also had me listening to, Eminem and Jackson 5 and Styx and Foreigner and Dizzy Gillespie and like everything under the sun, because my dad, like me, just loved music. It just happened to be that with his vocal tone and his upbringing, that country was what he was good at, great at performing.
Right.
But he loved everything.
Well, so you got to be a student of the game. We were talking about that, about podcasts, and we've been talking about music long before we hit record on this thing.
Right, right.
And that's what I like, dude. I just love, I love music so much that I'll just like actively seek out new music to listen to. Or like with the podcast, it's like, I do a podcast, so I listen to a ton of podcasts.
Yeah.
You got to be a student of the craft.
That's exactly what you said earlier. It was like, you got to find people that are doing what you're doing at a more, even higher level than you, because that's what you're shooting for. So right. Why would you not take in what they're doing?
Right. And the salt lamp, I think, is really helping me.
Yeah, it really is.
Joe Rogan has a salt lamp.
He would
lamp.
Be proud.
And you, first thing when you came in, you're like, man, I'm really digging that salt lamp.
But yeah, as much as I was digging it, after you told me the reasoning behind purchasing the salt lamp, I was even more of a fan of it.
Yeah.
Because I sit and listen to Joe Rogan's podcast all day. He has some of the best guests and best Q&As with people. His one with Tom Segura is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
And I love Tom Segura's podcast as well.
Yeah. Your mom's house?
Yeah, that's great. The one with Bill Burr is awesome.
It's nice to know that Joe Rogan has your second favorite podcast, and Sean Versus Wild has your number one favorite.
I feel like that was unspoken at this point. Yeah,
you didn't even have to say
it. Am I on Joe Rogan's podcast?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
But yeah, well, and you know what, too? Like with the country music and stuff that you loved, dude, country music was just on fire when we were younger.
The mid-90s.
Yeah.
I mean, good gosh, it was, yeah.
You got Garth, Dwight, Yoakam. You got Travis Tritt.
Travis Tritt.
Tracy
dude.
Lawrence, Tracy Byrd, Mark Chestnut.
Yeah, yeah.
George Strait. You know, it was great. It was on fire then. Also, a little fun fact for you, Garth Brooks is actually the best-selling artist of the 90s. Of the entire decade.
Yeah.
So, guys, put that in perspective, man. TLC, Britney Spears, Michael Jackson, you know, these people are not selling the records Garth is selling.
Didn't he break? I don't know for sure now, but I feel like there was a Beatles record that he at least matched or like broke.
I'm sure.
In record sales or something like that.
And could you imagine, know? Like, oh, this record's been out for 2 years and it broke the Beatles album sales from, you know, 20 years, 30 years prior?
Exactly. That you're talking about. Multiple generations of people have existed between then and there, and you broke a record. That's a huge deal. And not to go on a Garth rant, but like the fact that he did that and was actually a very talented individual. It wasn't just the branding or his look, or he wasn't even like that. You know, he was kind of like a chubby Oklahoma guy, but
he's like Jim Ross.
The dude, yeah, he looked like a fit Jim Ross, you know, and
but not too fit.
Yeah, he still really liked his pork, you know.
Right,
but he he was just very, very talented in his appreciation for soul. And here's the thing. The reason I ended up loving him so much, definitely, as I found out, was more because of his soul influence and his soul influence that he mixed with country. Because through him and covers that I watched him do, I discovered Ray Charles. And then my new favorite artist became Stevie Wonder. And I went and saw Stevie Wonder when I was 17. My dad took me to I don't know what it was called then, but now it's Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And I saw him when I was 17 years old, and it literally, no cliche or, hyperbole, changed my life. Seeing him live changed my life. And I owe that seriously to Garth Brooks, because watching interviews with him and listening to him talk about what his influences were, they were Stevie Wonder and Kiss and all these bands that weren't even country bands
right,
at all.
Exactly.
So I think that's part of a big reason why I was such a big fan of his. Not because he was a country artist, but because he was just such a talented artist in general.
Well, you know what's funny? And again, not to go on this Garth rant. We're going to change the podcast to the Garth Rant Podcast. But it's funny where your influences lie, because Garth Brooks was huge in my household also.
Really?
And Garth covered a Kiss song. And guys, check it out if you haven't.
Hard Luck Woman.
Hard Luck Woman.
So good.
And so I was like, when he was saying, like, I like Kiss, and this was the band, and the live show that I had on VHS tape was, like, inspired by Kiss. And, you know, he paints his face for his greatest hits album and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I got to check out this band, Kiss. And so I remember mailing out a blank cassette tape to my uncle that's a Kiss fan. He lives in Indianapolis. I literally bought a blank cassette and mailed it to him and was like, can you tape some Kiss songs on here?
No way.
And then he did. And then
that's so rock and roll.
That was
dude.
The day where I'm just like, dude, I'm a rocker now.
Right. I mean, dude, yeah. And then, you know, you discover Kiss and you find out that it only takes four chords and a shit ton of charisma.
And some huge pyro and some makeup.
Yeah, right,
and some
exactly.
8-inch heels, and you're a rock star.
Quick sidebar about Kiss. One of my favorite stories about Kiss is before they were famous, probably before the face paint too, but I would imagine, they were bar gigging like any other rock band, especially right. in those days. They couldn't afford, like, you know, cabs or, you know, like big subwoofers or anything. So they would take their gear, and I guarantee you this had to be Gene's idea, just knowing what I know about him. They took their cabs and they put them in plywood boxes that were like big enough to carry two cabs, but only had one in them.
Right.
It was like, it seriously was like probably like 15-inch horns in there, right. But it looked like it had a sub and then like two 15-inch horns on top of it. And they draped black curtains around it. People would literally ask them to turn down because they thought it was too loud. Cause just the perception.
Right, of
and their charisma
wall of sound.
Exactly. But they were like, you know, two crappy Yorkville 15s in there that were barely putting anything out.
Right.
I just love that story because I've been in that scenario before.
Fake it till you make it, guys. Exactly. If you want to be a rock star, you gotta first act like one.
Exactly.
Let this be.
And they were that to a T.
Rockin' 101. But that's funny that we both but it makes sense. And we wound up here together because of Garth. Thank you, Garth.
Yeah, thank you, Garth.
End Brooks. Of Garth Rand.
Yeah.
All right.
End Garth Rand.
So but yeah, so you went from country music to then you got into Stevie Wonder. I'm sure the Motown, you went down that.
That became was because also my first instrument was bass. Got a bass when I was 14. Fun story that you will appreciate more so than anybody listening because you know the people involved. So this tattoo on my forearm is of a 1992 Fender P Bass Lite that I play and have played my entire career up to this point. And it was my dad's. And the reason my dad acquired this bass was because in 1992 and a couple years previous for that time period, he had been working for Marvin Maxwell at the Mom's Music in Jeffersonville. And this is back when Marvin was still there, like running the store.
Right.
And so my dad was still gigging regularly then. I was born, they found out they were going to have me. And Marvin, the person that he is, the interesting character he is, had been trying to get somebody to name their kid after him for years. Just because. And, you know, Dad went to school with Mark and Max. He grew up, like, looking up to Marvin the way a lot of people in my generation looked up to Mark and Max when they were young teenagers right. in rock school and stuff. So same type of dynamic there. And so he told Marvin, I'll name my kid after you just because I respect you and spent half my teenage years in your basement jamming on your equipment. Like, I would just like to do that. And Marvin said, if you do that, you can take anything you want off the wall. And so my dad didn't think anything of it. And so later on, I'm born. He comes in, shows me off, and Marvin's like, dude, oh my God, please, seriously, like, whatever you want, it's yours. Take anything out of this store. I can't believe you did this for me. And so he took, at the time, a brand new cherry red Fender P Bass Light and played it for a number of years till he quit playing regularly. And the night of my first gig at that same store when I'm 14 for my first, like, rock school concert, whatever right. band I was in, I don't even remember now. The three songs we were going to play, he gave it to me that night. And I've been playing that bass ever since. I've never owned another bass. Every gig I've ever played, I've played with that bass.
That's such an awesome story. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Well, and you got a cool bass out of it. You just had to live the rest of your life.
Cool bass and an intriguing name is the right. way I'll go for that.
Yeah, dude. Well, you know, and when you were a kid, you were saying that you like went by your middle name. And that's where I originally met you. But now that you're an adult, dude, being named Marvin... That's hot right now, man. Classic
yeah.
names.
Yeah, exactly. You it wasn't hip to be named Marvin when I was 13. It was just another reason to get put in a trash can or shoved in a locker. And I had plenty of reasons for that to begin with. I didn't need another one. So
yeah, mostly the Dragon Ball Z.
The Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, right. You're
the
probably
horrible
the coolest.
Flat top.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, that's awesome. So now you're going down the Motown vibe and stuff like that. And I can really definitely tell in just the way you play because. You know, a lot of people that I know, obviously they're growing up in like a lot of metal roots or punk rock stuff and all that is like in their style, you know, it's in their musical wheelhouse. But you, man, you just have like something like completely different, man. It's like, I don't know if you necessarily have ever been like classically, I don't know, just something about it is just very unique. So that's why I was excited to have you on the podcast, because, dude, I see your work and you're just absolutely killing it. And you're just doing kind of stuff around here that nobody else does.
Well, really. Dude, I really appreciate that. And the only thing I can say to that statement is just that I have been doing, I tell people that for the last, I guess it would be 8 to 9 years, I have been carrying some type of gear into a bar and playing music in front of people 9 weekends out of 10.
Right.
You know, and I would say 60% of that would be solo acoustic, which means I've been doing the stuff I want to play solo acoustic. The rest of it has been hired gun stuff, playing for everything from like classic country bands to pop country to rock to casino bands, and everything in between, anything that paid. It's like strictly, I would call it utility musicianship.
Right.
But the other stuff, the 60% of it has been me going out and just playing the stuff I love playing. And I've just been very fortunate to put my own spin on it in a way that everybody can appreciate it. Like, I can be in a room with several different peoples from different walks of life, several different even skin color, and I can play almost any song and they all can appreciate it, because frankly, as a cover musician, when you learn to do that, you make more money.
Right.
You know, so it came from a fiscal, financial mindset at first, but then I realized that if I can turn anything into, I would say I put an R&B blues vibe to every cover I do. So there's certain songs I can never do, but not ones you would think, you know, and, right. And that's where the fun part begins, because it's like, do I want to do a Folsom Prison? Yeah, but I'm not really a country musician. So, okay, I'll do it halftime. I'll make everything a 7 chord and I'll sing it like Stevie Wonder would sing it. And then I do that. And then over years and years, I've been covering that song for 7 years, over years and years of doing that, I can just pick up a flat top and just do that now.
Right.
And it just comes out the way I know it comes out. I don't even think about it. And so people refer to that as putting your own spin on it. And I like that, because it's a way to get your own organic artistry into something that's not fully yours.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but exactly. And it also, like I said, it sets you apart and it makes people want to, you know,
yeah,
hire you.
Exactly.
Because they're like, oh, this is Marvin and he's good for, you know, any of these gigs. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So you send everybody home happy. Like somebody told me, I don't remember who it was, a long time ago. It's like, if everybody goes home happy, then you've done your job as a cover entertainer musician. And right. And so that's where that all stemmed from.
That's awesome. What are some of your favorite songs that are in your repertoire?
Superstition has been top 10 since I started. It's one of the first songs I ever learned on bass. Recent stuff though, I do this with the band, that I'm actually recording EP with here soon. Let 'Em In by Wings, Paul McCartney's band. Have you ever heard that song before?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that has become like my new favorite song to play, no matter where it is, what it is.
And that's why I'm so happy that you decided to do this podcast, because even just getting to sit down and talk to people about, you know, Wings with a song that isn't Band on the Run.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or Live and Let Die.
Yeah. Dude, Live and Let Die is, I've been trying to get the band to cover that, but it's very hard to do with just a 2-guitar bass band. But, Let 'Em In, a couple more would be, I absolutely love doing,
oh man, thinking about it.
It's an Alicia Keys song.
Gotcha.
Some people want it all, but I don't want nothing at all.
Guys, if that was just a little sample. You,
baby. I can't remember the name of the song because it's not actually in the song. It's just a title. I can't remember the name of the song, but I absolutely love playing that one. That's one where like you kind of get, if you really get into the song, like you kind of leave Earth for a second.
Right.
And you come back and like you're crying for no reason. Like yeah, on stage, I'm just like, out. I don't know what I'm crying
what
for.
What happened? You're like Will Ferrell in Old School. Just like, guys, I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. It feels so good on my lips. No, stuff, mainly R&B stuff is my favorite stuff to cover because I love figuring out how to take that huge production value of like that Alicia Keys song or something like that and convert it down to just me and a flat top, because that's usually been the formula. Because typically covering, just until recently, any stuff that I wanted to cover has always been just me,
right,
doing solo stuff. So the most I had was a loop pedal. Much right. less a full band. Now I'm in a position where I have guys with me that are like-minded, and it's very cool.
That's awesome. Where'd you learn how to sing, man? Where'd you get that voice? Is that a church thing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I did performances at church as a kid. But honestly, I've just always been singing. I don't know, man. I'm weird. I seriously tell people like I'm busy sometimes, so I can just like drive around in my car and sing to songs.
Oh, you mean just, you know, put in work?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not even
that
just,
is busy.
Yeah, true. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't just do it for like my own pleasure. Like I've been doing that forever. So when you ask me how long I've been singing for, like seriously, the cognitive memory as long as I can ever remember.
That's also a great. I'm glad that you brought that up because I don't want to sound like an idiot or anything. But I seriously, like, if I'm driving to and from work or if I'm out driving, I will have fake podcasts in my head where I'm asking people questions and just wanting to see what that would sound like or how to word it correctly, especially if, like, say I had, you know, you're coming over here, you know, later on. So it's like, all right, I got to figure out what I'm going to say and how to say it and make it not sound stupid.
You definitely shouldn't feel bad about that, because I'd be 100% lying to you if I didn't tell you that for like the last, ever since we decided to do this, if I have any length of time in my car by myself, I've been answering questions from a
fictitious
person who's not there.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been in my car and just been like, well, you know, it's funny you asked that, Sean, because like, and then I feel like a pretentious asshole doing that, but I'm like, I don't want to sound stupid
right.
on his podcast, you know? So, no, I totally get where you're coming from.
Hey, preparation prevents piss poor performance, guys.
If I can say anything about myself, and I can't say much, I'm well spoken. I don't have much outside of that, but I'm very well spoken.
You're the Barack Obama of Louisville musicians.
Yes, I can talk real good.
That's awesome, dude. Well, and you know what, dude? Let's go ahead and give everybody a peek, man. They heard your voice here singing, and I think that we should play them a little ditty here. I'm gonna do a little musical break here, guys. Now you have a mashup, and we're gonna explore that. Tell everybody what it is and how you came up with it and all that good stuff. Give them the deets.
So I've got about three or four, like maybe five songs over the last 5 years that just over time, like you listen to what people say and you keep track of it. And they're my, I guess most popular covers and mashups.
Your show off songs.
Yeah, my show off songs. Like if somebody were to have me audition for anything, these would be the first ones that come to mind. Like I just know that I can do well with them. And this one is Crazy by Gnarls Barkley into Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers. Same key, so I just found a way to put them together, and it's kind of a unique transition. And this is off of my SoundCloud account. You can check it out. It's soundcloud.com/MarvinTheOdd. And yeah, there's a couple other stuff on there like this as well.
All right, guys. Well, you heard the man. So let's check out his music here. Again, with his mashup of Crazy and Ain't No Sunshine, this is Marvin. Zoinks, guys. Turns out we were totally in the zone and misspoke when we said the name of this mashup. So this is actually going to be a mashup of Crazy by Gnarls Barkley and Maneater by Hall & Oates. So guys, check out this mashup from Marvin.
I remember when I lost my mind. Something so pleasant about that face. Had so much space. But you were out there without care. I was out of touch. It wasn't 'cause I didn't know enough. Just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? possibly. But I know that you are having the time of your life, so just think twice. That's my only advice. Who do you, who do you, who do you, who do you think you are? Oh, ha, 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 bless your soul. Really think you're in control? I say you're crazy. I think you're crazy. And I think you're crazy. Just like me. Seen it here before. Watching, waiting. Ooh, she's sipped with you, but eyes are on the door. So me and pay to see what you think. Give for free. The woman's wild, but she got tamed by the purr of a jaguar. Money's matter. If you're in for love, you ain't gonna get too far. Oh, when she comes, watch out, boy, she'll chew you up. Oh, when she comes, she's a man-eater. Oh, when she comes, watch out, boy, she'll chew you up. Oh, when she comes, she's a man-eater. I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. And I think you're crazy. Just like me.
All right, guys, that was Marvin taking you to Toontown. Welcome back to the Garth Rant Podcast, a conversation between friends in low places. JK, it's Sean versus Wild.
Yeah, I like that, though. Also, the Toontown, immediately thought of Who Framed
Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, dude. Man.
It's a classic.
It is a classic.
Yeah, a little before your time, bro. Surprise you.
Dude, I was on that VHS tape life, just like anybody else.
Dude, I actually have a collection of probably, I don't know, 600 VHS tapes.
Really?
Yes, I have them all boxed up just because I don't have room. I had them all in this huge bookcase, and then I came home one day and that bookcase had just like broken in half due to the weight of the VHS tapes. Thanks, Target.
What was one of your favorite VHS tapes? Like when you think of like the movies just as a kid that you had, they were on VHS. What's one of the first ones that come to mind? Like an iconic like a sleeve.
Oh, an iconic sleeve. I don't know, dude. My number one of my favorite movies of all time, and definitely the movie that I saw the most as a kid, was Tombstone. And
you're a man after my own heart.
Dude, the cover is fantastic. The movie is fantastic. I've seen that movie thousands of times. Very quotable. Super awesome movie. And guys, even if you don't like Westerns, you gotta love Tombstone.
I'm your Huckleberry.
I'm your Huckleberry. Exactly. But yeah, dude, so we just checked out your mashup here, and we were talking too, man. I'm glad that you're back in town, because I know that you pretty much live a life where you're going out and about, and yeah. you're taking your music to the masses.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about, you know, what you've been up to, your travels and all that.
Well, I as far as going out of state goes, it started when I was, so I was 19, I was kind of lost, you know, that post high school haze that we all fall into.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, everything I thought was going to happen is not happening, and it's horrible.
I thought I'd be an adult right when I turned 18.
Yeah, I thought that's how it worked. I thought I'd get an adult card and I'd just like, get a house and a mortgage and a boat, and it's just what it is. None of that happened. So I did a year of college and it was not happy to be there, and it showed. And so I was actually going to join the Air Force, and then found out that a band from Corydon, who they still play around now, the Rachel Timberlake Band, awesome lady, her and her husband Jason.
That's Justin's mom and dad, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. No, it was a great experience, but I feel like the paychecks would have been a lot bigger if Justin Timberlake would have been involved. No, it really was a great experience. It was my first step into the professional working musician thing, and I was very lucky and fortunate to skip a few steps because Rachel was very talented and already had some buzz around her. Actually, the year that I started playing with her, she was rated by CMT as one of the top 64 unsigned artists in the U.S.
Oh, nice.
Had a music video on their website, CMT's website, which if you know anything about country music, that's like the epitome of, you know, being successful. So I auditioned to play for her when I was, I just turned 20. It was summer of 2011. I started playing with her, and, man, she had, you know, I believe she had some type of backing of some sort.
Justin Timberlake, obviously.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And then also her and her husband were just like they were both ex-collegiate athletes. They're very driven, and they just went at it like killing wasps, man. I mean, just hard. And we were playing my first year. We played essentially 180 to 190 dates a year. Like every weekend we went out and played. So that became a huge part of my life. So I pretty much walked right out of high school immediately into being a touring musician, you know, cause then she was a school teacher and so was her husband. So during the summer, free reign.
Right.
And we were doing like 2 week, 3 week tours. We would play in Put-in Bay, Ohio. It's an island in the middle of Lake Erie. We would play in Savannah, Georgia on the waterfront. We would play, like CMA sponsored events. I got to like occasionally brush shoulders with like legit players. Like we played, a thing called Cow Jam in Minden or Minden, Michigan. And we opened up for Randy Houser and Chris Cagle,
cool.
Which in that scene is a pretty big deal. And I got to meet Chris Cagle, which frankly, as a person who grew up in New Washington, Indiana, and was watching CMT on his days off from school, that was pretty cool.
Right.
So I did that for 2.5 years and then things run their course. And then there was a local band here in Southern Indiana that still plays this day, has, I think they're on like their 25th year as a band, known as The Rumors.
Right, yeah.
Which they're probably, pound for pound, the most successful private party type band around here. I mean, as far as longevity goes.
Yeah. Yeah, them and the Monarchs.
Yeah, them and the Monarchs and the Louisville Crashers are like the... But the Rumors and Monarchs have been doing it for decades. Like, yeah. There's family generations involved in the Monarchs. So I don't even know how that happened, but I auditioned to play for The Rumors. All these guys are like old enough to be my father. They've been playing for 20 years, but I got the gig. So I played around here for a year, all of 2014. I played with them. We did like the Horseshoe Casino, stuff like that. And then I started to get this itch to just like, it's like, man, I'm not bad at this. Like, I've right. done it long enough now for a paycheck that I can say I'm not bad at it. And I'm, you know, coming from where we come from, you get a very heavy, affinity for being humble. And you don't want to, you know, act cocky at all because we're just from that Bible Belt, you know.
Right.
We're from that area. And I think that's a very good thing. I think it can be negative sometimes, though, because there's a difference between confident in your abilities and a dick. Right. You know, there's actually a pretty big area of change there. So I kind of had this bug, and I told the guys that I was going to move, and I moved to – back when I played with Rachel, we would do those CMA events. I met a guy named Kermit Thumper Tarver, who is a drummer. Actually currently holds the record at NAMM for the fastest double bass I guess, measure or whatever. Like he did the most beats per minute.
Yeah, BPMs.
Yeah, BPMs. Yeah, sorry, not a drummer. that is the correct terminology. Beats per minute. And so he was playing at the Tootsies. There's one in Nashville and there's one in PCB. He was the house drummer for the one in PCB. And I had his phone number and I was just like, okay, PCB looks like there's a lot of music there. Let's do that. And so I called him. Spoke to him and his fiance, and they said, you can crash with us. And I threw everything in the back of my Ranger, and I popped down to Panama City Beach, and I moved there at the January 1st of 2015. I moved there.
And that's when you became the Panama City Playboy.
That's when I became the Panama City Playboy, which I am known as throughout the southern entire Gulf area. It's just, most wanted posters of me all around town to this day. No, I moved down there, and... Man, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I really had no concept of what I was doing. I took such an old school approach to something that, a lot of people my age were, and there's no right or wrong. It's just the distinction that I see now looking back, and it's very funny to me. I was not trying to start a YouTube channel. I was not trying to, I just wanted to say I didn't have to have a real job, to be frank with you. Like, I just wanted to be able to say I was a musician for a living. And I knew I could do covers well enough that I could say that. And if I got to play some original stuff, cool. But at that point, it was just like doing my version of cover songs and getting paid. And so, dude, 3 months in, I was able to quit the day job that I got while I was down there. And I was playing like a Monday night gig, a Tuesday night gig. I got hired at Spinnaker Beach Club, which is like, that and Club LaVille are like the two biggest bars in that whole area of Florida. I was driving over to Sandestin and playing golf resorts and stuff like that. And it was just, dude, I mean, I was driving up and down the coast, you know. I wasn't making tons of money. I didn't bring anything back with me, but it was just a really cool experience. I became a part of a family down there of local business owners and stuff. And just got to meet a lot of cool people and have a lot of really, really cool experiences. I mean, when I played at Spinnaker Beach Club, where they put their acoustic artists is on this high rise that's above the whole restaurant, and you're just looking at the ocean the whole time. So, like, even if it was a dead gig, like, nobody there whatsoever, I still just got to sit there and look at the sun set on the ocean.
I'm getting paid, and I'm in Florida, and I'm checking out the ocean.
Bitch about that, you know. You almost can't. And there were some boards where I was pulling two-a-days. I would play 6 to 10 as dinner entertainment there, and then drive up the street to Miss Newbies and play as a bass player for a band from like 10:30 to 2:30. But I was walking out of a weekend with like $700 cash in my pocket.
Yeah.
So it was very, very cool experience.
Would you say that now you know how Jimmy Buffett feels?
I do. Because I've freaking lived in Margaritaville. And it's funny you say that, because I lived there for about a year. And then I moved back here for a little while, which is the second time I moved into Brian Moser's house.
Right, yeah.
That would be when you moved out. Shout out to Brian. Thank you for that revolving door. shout out to Brian. I came home for a little bit, saved a little bit of cash, and was trying to figure out what my next move was, and then I actually moved to Nashville.
And which is the place to be.
Which is, yeah, I mean, especially if you're from here, you're so close. You know, it's 2.5 hours. You gain an hour when you go down. But yeah, I came back here and saved up a little nest egg and moved to Nashville, and the first regular gig I got in Nashville was Margaritaville on Broadway in downtown Nashville.
Yeah, dude, so you just can't escape it.
You can't, dude. No.
Every flip-flop you have is blown out because you stepped on a pop-top.
Yeah, exactly.
You are Jimmy Buffett.
But there's booze in the blender, dude.
Yeah,
so
it's cool.
Soon it will render. I hate how well I know that song in my head. On my deathbed, I will be able to quote.
Yeah. Yeah, on your deathbed, you'd be like, you smell that? It's shrimp. They're beginning to boil.
It's beginning to boil. Oh, Mexican cutie.
Yeah. nice. But yeah, so, and, you know, I talk to a lot of people that, you know, are in bands, do a lot of touring and stuff, and I feel like a lot of people out there can relate to that because you're packing up all your stuff and you're moving to places and you're making your dream work. And that's a really, awesome, noble thing, I guess. I don't know how to describe it, especially from where we come from. Not a lot of people like pursue their dreams that heavily. You know what I'm saying?
No, and that's a There's this, I don't know if you ever listened to much NPR or, there's this radio show that's been around for years called the, Prairie Home Companion.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with that. Garrison Keillor, Keillor, how you pronounce it. He has a quote that I use, although he's from a much, he's from Michigan, a little north of us, same mindset. And it's, he said at one point, somebody asked him, how did you know that the radio show was taking off, or how did you know it was going to be a success? And he's like, oh, I didn't. He's like, as a matter of fact, where I come from, any delusions of being successful in anything other than a factory job or a 9-to-5 is immediately shoved into a treasure chest and buried deep, deep down. And it was funny when he said it, but it was kind of one of those things where it's funny because it's like very true.
Yeah.
And that's something where we come from. It's, you know, and it's not even a thing to we all go through that rebellious stage where like, screw where I'm from, screw those people. It's not even really something. People are who they are, and you are a product of your environment.
Right.
And so it's nothing to hate on, but it is definitely a thing. It's definitely a dynamic that exists in here.
And it's a trade-off, too, because, I mean, there have been plenty of days, especially like, you know, living in a van or living, you know, out on the road. Trying
sure
to make,
do wish I had that $150,000 home my buddy has and that real estate job. You know, that looks really nice right now.
Right, exactly.
But he looks at your life and goes, man, I have to go up every day and push paper. And I just saw that picture on Facebook of Sean, you know, on Warp Tour. Or I just saw Marvin post him atop of that deck at Spinnaker. It's all in your perception and how you right. take it. The fact of the matter is that not everybody's born with a talent. Some people are. It doesn't make, it's not a better or worse thing. It's just a different path of life.
Yeah.
And when you can appreciate anybody taking what they have and doing the best with it, that's really all it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's no different than going to college. My going to college was throwing my stuff in the back of a 15-passenger van and playing.
Yeah.
I learned from 19 to 21 or 22, whenever I would have graduated college, I learned a lot. It just wasn't...
You didn't get a diploma from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, they don't do paper diplomas.
Right, exactly. It's digital. I can probably type something probably up for you. One.
Yeah.
Check out my Facebook. Here are these
right.
photos.
Yeah, that's my diploma. Exactly.
Right, exactly. Well, and now you're back here. And you put together a band. I know you were mentioning them a little bit earlier. Tell me about the you know, this project of adding more people here to the Marvin brand.
So it's essentially just taking what the acoustic show was and just adding a, it's more than that, but the concept is that I'm just taking my acoustic sets and now we're putting a full band to it. And now we're writing music as well. And that's honestly been the coolest thing. I've got, two of the guys in the band I've known, kind of like Mike Mullins. They were like some of the first people I met. You know, you kind of, your friend groups, there's always multiple divisions, but the biggest one is your pre and post high school.
Right.
Because like...
when people liked you before you were anybody.
Exactly. And so post high school, like people I met right afterwards would be Mike Mullins and Michael Atterbury and Scott Abbott. Scott Abbott actually has some history in this scene as well. He used to play for Peace of Osberg, I believe, was a band that was around the area. And then he also played in, what was the...
Old Peace of Augsburg. Haven't thought about them in a hot minute.
Right. Scott's an incredibly talented musician. He's the drummer in this band, but the man can play bass, guitar. He played guitar better than I ever thought about playing it. And if he took his time, he could be every bit as good a bass player as I am. But he's playing drums in this band. Michael Atterbury is an incredibly talented guitarist who I've known my whole life. And then Teddy Varin is the other lead guitarist. And they're both just, I mean... They've found this niche that works so good for them, and the stuff that we're writing has a very signature sound, truthfully mainly because of them and their guitar work.
Right.
So those are the guys in the band, and we've been writing for about 2 months now. We've been playing cover gigs here and there, which actually I know we said we were going to mention next Friday, the 20th, at the Barrel House on Market in Jeffersonville. Yeah. We're going to be playing a pre-Thunder / my birthday party. From 10 to whenever they kick us out. So if you're not doing anything, it's free, no cover. Stop by there and see us if you're in the Jeffersonville area.
And guys, if this podcast comes out later, just know that it was an awesome time.
Yeah, please, yeah.
Just go ahead and time travel back to April 20th
right.
and have a great time.
I didn't know how to approach that one because I didn't know what that whole thing was, but just know about it, whether it's post it or pre it, regardless. Just
it's 420, guys. It's, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most people probably aren't going to be able to remember it regardless. But we've been writing original music. We've got six tracks that we're very, very confident in putting out there is what we are as a band, and we're just tightening them up to the utmost degree. And then May 4th, actually, I believe, Star Wars Day, we are going to record.
Sean's birthday eve, guys.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
May 5th is my birthday.
No
so
way.
May the 4th. Cinco de Mayo. Yes. Well, Sean's birthday eve is what I like to call it.
That's fair enough.
Oaks
yeah.
Day.
Oaks Day. Yeah, the day that all the teachers take off because they're, quote, sick, end quote.
Yep. Professional Development Day.
Exactly. No, we're recording. Actually, we're going to shout out to Darlington Pears because Aaron, Skyler, Cliffy, those are the guys that were at their studio is actually where we're going to be recording. So
awesome.
We're looking forward to that. It's very all homegrown, organic. It's so, from my perspective, it's very cool that, excuse me, I left here because, you know, when I started my journey, I mean, 7 years ago, if you want to count Rachel, the music scene here was probably at its lowest.
Right.
In every facet, whether it be metal, indie, cover stuff. Like, it was all just with Rachel, I bet out of those 185 dates a year we played, maybe 25 of them were here.
Right.
We traveled three times more than we ever played here. But since then, there has been this uprising in development and artistry and local business and, like, Spring Street. I mean, you've seen it. I work on Spring Street, like you said, the Vinyl Lounge above H.M. Frank's, and stuff just keeps popping up. And with that comes a need for entertainment.
Right.
And with that comes gigs and stuff like that. So it's very cool that I left in search of this thing that I wanted, and it's all come full circle. And now all the stuff that I wanted to happen is happening with the people that it started with. Because it's not the first time that me and my friends have tried to put a group together, but frankly, just there's a certain amount of maturity you need, and there's and life got in the way as well. And it's so, so cool that it's happening now amongst people that I've known for so long, and we're all coming together to do it.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to go out there and find yourself real quick.
Yeah. But it couldn't have happened then. It had to happen now.
Exactly.
Those things had to happen for this to take place.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that too, is like, you know, back when Aha Baby Yeah was playing in, you know, 2010,
shout
2011.
Out to Aha Baby Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we had to go elsewhere.
Right.
You know, like in Louisville, people didn't want to hear like a dance rock band or anything like that, you know, or like a, just a rock band in general, you know. Yeah, there was metalcore, and yeah, there was what have you, and that did pretty well here. And I don't want to sound, but we had to make our name out on the road everywhere else.
No, it doesn't sound like anything. That's just what it was. That was the fact of the matter.
And I feel personally like, until we got like Warped Tour and some of the other stuff, like that's when our local scene really started.
Yeah, because then they had something to associate it with
right.
outside of their thing. But the fact of the matter is that if you would have had that same tenacity for your own scene, which now it is happening, which is great. You know, like this Friday, freaking Gravehaven is Greyhaven's going to be playing at Spinelli's with our friend Foster, Guerrilla Warfare, and I was just mentioning Darlington Pears. All three of those bands are going to be playing a show. Dude, that place will be uncomfortably packed.
Oh yeah,
I won't be there because I have to work, unfortunately. That place is going to be crazy.
And the scene is huge now.
Yeah,
it's just getting revived again, which is fantastic.
And you know what's so crazy is that Darlington Pears is. This is a crazy positive thing I'm saying. It's crazy. Darlington Pears is playing that. Darlington Pears is not a metal band,
right? Exactly.
But that is where the
diversity,
the community comes into play. It doesn't matter. It's just we're all on such a, and it's the same thing. I'll just let you know as the bar scene goes as well, especially on Spring Street and the whole Jeff area. There's no cutthroat type mentality because we're all just so stoked that in this strip of area that nobody gave a shit about 8 years ago, entertainment or cuisine wise, that there's now a cigar bar, the Red Yeti. O'Shea's brand, a speakeasy, that Vinyl Lounge, you know, and then with that, it's no coincidence that as these things rise up, you're getting more people like Darlington Pears and, you know, Marvin and stuff like that, because it breeds a place for people to go and commune and be together. And it's just very, very cool to get to be a part of that.
Yeah. And I noticed too, over the last 5 years or so, maybe the scene became much more cooperative and much less competitive.
Exactly.
And it's everybody's just like, hey man, we're all here together and we're going to do it. And I mean, the scene keeps my podcast alive because the same people that, you know, go out to these shows are the people that are tuning into the podcast.
And the people playing the shows.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are the people you're talking to. Exactly.
So, guys, if you want to check out Darlington Pairs, go ahead and check out the back catalog of Sean vs. Wild. You can peep my conversation with them.
I may or may have not mentioned that, knowing that you did an interview with them.
Oh, and Greyhaven, too, you say? Yeah, they're on there. Oh, yeah, Guerrilla Warfare? Yeah, they're on there,
oh,
too.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah. Oh, dang. So, you got a lot of listening. You got a lot of homework, listeners. But, yeah, dude. And so, now you got this thing going. You got a record. You got some recordings and stuff coming out in May. And are being recorded in May and probably be released
before the end of May. Yeah, I would say so, because we've already got like album art and stuff already. Pretty much every other thing that we could get a head start on, we've already started on. It's just the product itself now.
And you know what I really like about what I like about you, Marvin, and what I like about our conversation here is, you know, a lot of people join bands and they do their own original stuff because they love the idea of being famous or being a rock star. Or they love attention, or they love the fuel that it gives, you know, their personal ego or whatever. And I don't want that to sound negative.
But I think we both know people that are the epitome of that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's fine, dude. Like, get yours while you can.
Yeah, but what makes you happy?
But what I love about like having this conversation with you and you and I sitting down talking before even this podcast started is I feel like we both got into playing music. Because we love music, like genuinely love like the music. And we're sitting here, we're talking about Garth and Stevie Wonder, and we were talking about Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin earlier and all this other sort of thing, because we just love music and we love to play it and it makes us feel good.
We could talk about hip hop too, man. I'm going to see Tech N9ne here soon when he comes in, his Planet tour comes into town, because once again, you want to talk about somebody that gives me hope for, and in reference to what you said, not to get too many subjects at once here, but what you said about the way I talk about, you know, my passion and stuff, in the same way that you view yours and the success that you've had, it is really about the music. Because I gotta be honest with you, Sean, my goal of like what I want to accomplish with this would be if I could make what is considered a normal person's wage, like what your typical person that goes to college, gets a business degree, gets a 9-to-5, so like 80,000 to maybe 100,000 a year. If I ever have a time in my life where every year I'm bringing in the low end of that scale, but it's purely from my own original music, dude, I don't freaking need. If I can own a home and a nice car and or whatever I decide to do, maybe I don't want a home, but if I can just pretty much do anything I want within like logical reason and never have to stress about it, simply from music that I created, not necessarily doing the cover band thing, because that's not what I'm shooting for. If I ever get to that point, that's success to me, man. And the cool thing is that if you hit that point, then the potential of going to the next level is a lot more. It's so silly to me. Not to say that anybody's dreams are silly. That didn't come out right. To go into this passion and this path of life with the goal of I'm going to be Justin Timberlake or Jason Aldean or Kendrick Lamar, and if I don't do that, then I didn't reach my goal. I hate to sound jaded or any type of thing. It's really just realism. You might end up being really disappointed, man, because once you're talking about that level, it's not just your tenacity or talent or work ethic. Like, there's a lot of things that have to fall in place perfectly, right place, right time type stuff for you to hit that. So you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing the craft a disservice to assume that that is the pinnacle of success, because, you know, Prince's bass player is doing just fine with her band right now.
Right.
You know, the last bass player he had, I can't remember her name right now, but she's a badass. And
last drummer from Louisville, right here. She's from Louisville.
No way, really? Yep. I did not know that.
Third Eye Girl is the name of the trio there.
Dude, that's something for me to look up. Then I would like to check that out.
Yeah.
But not to go off on tangent, I'm sorry, but just that you know, it's much more about just, man, I just want to be able to play music all the time and never have to do anything else if I don't have to.
Right.
Do it because I want to.
Right.
And so that's why I talk about it the way I do, because it's just, you know, it's just appreciating the craft for the craft, but understanding that I could make a living at it if I work hard enough.
And, you know, actually taking the time to sit back and enjoy what you're doing, you know? As Miley Cyrus says, it's about the climb, guys.
It is about the climb.
It's the climb.
And don't get it twisted. That is a great song. That's a ballad.
But yeah, dude, you know, so I you got a lot of stuff going on. And listeners, if you want to check out more Marvin, where can people find you online?
Facebook.com/MarvinTheOdd. And SoundCloud.com/MarvinTheOdd. Those are the two main social sites I would go for. And anything like Instagram or Snapchat will be always blasted on there, so you can find me through those sources as well. Like I said, the band goes into the studio to record May 4th. We're hoping by the end of that month to be releasing our first six-track EP. It's going to be called Make Amends. That's the single track off of it. And if you love soul, if you love feel good music that just has a deep groove and a very throwback feel, then we would hope that you would take the time to listen to us. And like I said, if you're in the area this coming week, and if this podcast does release at a time point where it makes sense for me to say this,
but you're always around every week.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't worry if you miss this one. Inevitably, there will be. I have the least stacked schedule I've ever had now, and I still play at least three times a month. You stop by next Friday, the 20th of April at 10 p.m. We're playing at the Barrel House on Market Street in Jeffersonville. It's going to be a good time. It's a pre-Thunder Marv birthday extravaganza. So come check that out, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not sure when this is going to air, so I'm going to be talking about it on the podcast anyway, guys. So whether it's in the future or it's in the past,
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It happened.
It happened, or it will happen, and you're going to have a great time regardless.
Exactly.
So that's what it's all about. Dude, and guys, speaking of, you know, things happening and things that have happened, we have finished this podcast, guys, and you made it all the way to the end, so congratulations. And if you like what you heard, which something tells me that you did, feel free to like, share, and subscribe. Sean versus Wild. It's on all the social media platforms. It's on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. It's on Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, wherever you do your podcasting, dude, wherever you do your podcast shopping, Sean versus Wild is there. So make sure you check it out and tell a friend about it, or tell 1,000 friends. That would be excellent.
That would be the optimum thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
The more friends.
I know it's about the climb, but I would like to climb at a much more rapid
pace. Climb.
With your help, I'd like to climb at a much more rapid pace. So, but yeah, and dude, Marvin, I'm so glad that we were able to sit down and chat over a bunch of waters.
Yeah.
A ton of waters.
Cracking back the tops on a few waters.
Yeah. And you were secretly worried. You're like, man, my allergies, my congestion.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't worry, man.
Sat here and rambled for an hour.
Yeah.
With no issues.
And it's going to be like, I was like, it's going to be like that episode of Friends, man, where Phoebe catches a cold. Her voice got even sexier. She gets rid of her cold. Then she has to try to get it again because that was where the magic happened.
Yeah. If that's the case, I will definitely get a cold again to come back and do this podcast if I need to.
I think we definitely made magic.
I'll bury my face in some weeds and just, you know, just sniffle up.
Yeah. Just take a big rail.
Hashtag sniffle up.
Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for joining. Marvin, thanks so much for stopping by,
Sean,
the Smithsonian.
Seriously, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. And, guys, this has been the Sean versus Wild podcast.
Thank you for listening, DNN.